Hello and welcome to another episode of the Shock Doctors Podcast. I'm Jim Smith. And we are the Shock Doctors. In this episode, we're going to be discussing Hellraiser, specifically the Hulu-mounted reboot that went up about a month ago, as directed by David Bruckner. We've already done one of his films here on the podcast, The Night House. What was that, like a year ago or so? Time being a flat circle and all. I mean, it's been a minute. I don't think it's been a year. You know what? Now that I think about it, I'm pretty sure we did that back in, like, March. That sounds right. So it's about 6 months, 7 months or so, half a year. So you're fairly confident that you have not enjoyed a podcast movie since The Night House? Fair enough. Does that mean you are more favorably inclined toward Hellraiser, or does the streak continue? Oh. Well, that's a shame, because we're probably going to be doing Pray for the Devil next. So, fucking strap in. It's certainly going to be the latter half of that phrase. How much fun it is, who can say until we see it? So, God damn it. So, Hellraiser, this one, follows Riley, who is a recovering addict. Not a smooth recovery of late, so it seems. And she lives with her brother and his boyfriend and another roommate. And she's also in this maybe toxic codependent thing with a fellow recovering addict. Do you remember his name? Trevor. I was about to say Trevor, but Trevor. And he talks her into breaking into this warehouse where they think they're going to find a bunch of loot. And instead, they find just this ornate puzzle box, and you know what happens. It unleashes the Cenobites. Right. Hell is raised, some portion thereof. Anyway, I think that's a solid primer. Why don't you start us off? Rent boy, yeah. Ha ha ha. Yeah, I also have a certain dearth of Hellraiser knowledge. I have only seen the first one, and I've only seen it once, because unlike Matt, I am not especially fond of it. So whether that contributes to my somewhat less hostile impression of this one, who knows? Who can say? Probably. But anyway. Sure. Skylight? A sky hole. A steel bird. Right. Colin. It's Colin. Yes. Yeah. They even show up in a van. Yep. Yeah. I mean, if he had pitched it as they don't need it, like, okay, that's fine. That's, if the billionaires have too much crap, fine. But yeah, they're gonna miss it. They're probably gonna send people to come look for it. If they weren't going to miss it, it wouldn't be locked up in a warehouse. Right. A little too much Ivan Ooze. I don't think it was Pinhead, because I'm relatively convinced we don't see Pinhead for like the first half of the movie. I think it's all just her deputies. Sky Hall. The world turns into a giant version of the puzzle box, basically. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
No.
You know they won't. Well, hold up. Riley goes by herself because Trevor shows up with the others in their mystery gang van. Yeah. The Googling. Yeah. Well, and Lazarus is one too, and that offers, as you might expect, resurrection. So Riley's like, oh, bingo. I gotta kill a few more people with this box, and then I can resurrect Matt, and all will be well. Well, especially because we see a little bit of the gate stuff during the prologue with Joey. Sorry, I had to say it that way for Godfather reasons. Zaza. No, God. It's, how long have you known me, Matt? Who is this pod person who likes Friends? So, yeah, it happens in the prologue. Joey tries to run out of the room, and Roland, Mr. Voight, flips one of these innumerable switches over on this panel, and it closes one set of the gates. So, we've seen the gates deployed already. We didn't necessarily need to see Riley go through all the different switches that close one of each of four sets of gates at the cardinal directions in the room. It probably would have sufficed to see it in the prologue. Right. Nora, I looked up her name. Nora. Soon we discover, well, I don't know exactly how it happens, but the upshot of all this is that it is Roland who has been living inside the walls like Brahms and has gotten hold of the box and deployed the spike and has stabbed her in the back with it. And he's got some kind of grody machinery grafted onto him, which we don't get a good look at right now, but we get plenty of looks at later, and we'll get into it at that time. But. So everybody, once they're able to get Nora out from behind the wall, get the hidden door back open, they pack her back in the van, and then they drive around trying to get out. They're pretty quickly lost. Then Nora starts slipping into the Cenobite realm. Certainly the first time up close. Nora. Could be. Right. Well, so there's basically Nora's blood spatters on the back of the bench seat in the middle of the van, and that causes them to turn around, like, ooh, and then they see something. It's not really clear whether there's like a pile of remains there or if it's just the blood, and they're just freaking out because Nora has disappeared. But either way, while they're all wigging out, Trevor crashes the van. So they have to scramble to get back to the mansion. They start seeing the Cenobites. The mechanics. Yeah, I agree. This was dumb as shit. So they get back to, there's a gate at the end of the long drive that leads up to the mansion. They get back to the gate and they're being most directly pursued by, I believe he's called the Chatterer. It's the one, it's the Cenobite that's just got like the bare skull with no features except a mouth with teeth bared and constantly chattering. I was glad he came back. The Chatterer is fun. He also, with the benefit of 35 years of pop culture hindsight, he also now reminds one a bit of Nemesis. But anyway, he's bearing down on him, and he pins Riley and Trevor behind the gate. He basically bends it 360 degrees all the way around its pivot point and then pins them against the backside of the little wall. And it's make or break time. They're taking one of you. Yeah, bafflingly. Yeah. Proceed to try and weaponize. Well, yeah, not to mention, well, okay, so I'll get there. But you said that Pinhead told Riley that there were three left. That was before Nora. So Nora was four. The Chatterer makes five, so they just need one more. And Riley's plan is they're going to use the video game doors to trap one of the remaining Cenobites and do the same shit. Well, yeah, and it seems like, at least for the most part, the mansion, once they're inside it and they've deployed the fences, more or less, it's impervious. So I don't know if there's some magic shit in there. I'm going to talk about that a little bit after the break. But Trevor has sustained a pretty serious Chatterer bite before the Chatterer is dispatched, so he's basically bleeding out. And Colin and Riley get him inside and basically tie off the wound with Riley's belt. And it's somewhere during this stretch, while Riley and Colin are strategizing in another room, Roland emerges, and he has a tete-a-tete with Trevor, and this is when we find out that Trevor is, in fact, the paid stooge of Voight, which is why he says all of these dumb things that lead to all of this trouble. He has ulterior motives. We don't know how much he's being paid or what he's been promised. Clearly it wasn't enough. Insofar as enough is a thing, it's still not enough. Like, what's the idea? Like, are you just getting like 20 grand or something? Or has he promised you something like really grandiose? Like, what is the motivation here? But, you know, whatever. Sure. Or maybe just a little more Rube Goldberg-esque. Make the spool run through a few more gears or pulleys or something. Anyhow, he's like, okay, well, just hurry up and get it done, idiot. And then he runs off back into his Brahms tunnels. Colin has to be there to flip switches. Like, he can't move. Oh, that's what I meant. Yeah, Trevor has to be there to flip switches. Sorry. Right. Well, certainly with the gates, the only thing that occurs to me is that the sort of geometric patterns in the. There's like a cage that can be deployed around the entire building, and that has geometry that kind of reminds me of the surface of the puzzle box. So that's the only reason why I'm inclined to think there's some kind of occult business going on with the architecture. Yeah. Sure. Damn. So, do we need to go into all the back and forth ins and outs of this, or do we just want to give the Cliff's notes? Yeah. Right. Well, okay. I don't think it looks anything like Independence Day. It looks like a giant black version of the Leviathan configuration. It's just, yeah, I mean, it's just a pointy Borg cube. And yeah, it deploys this giant chain, which impales Roland, who has just finished having his chest knit itself back together. And he's been like laughing with relief, and then bam, and he's getting pulled up. Meanwhile, Colin has been attacked by Cenobites, basically. He doesn't get chains this time, he gets wire, which cinches itself hard, like a garrote, around his limbs and around his neck. And Riley finally does what she should have done back at the fucking gate outside the house, which is she stabs Trevor. The blade has not been deployed, but again, both ends of this thing are very pointy right now, so she just stabs him with it. So now there's an alternate sixth sacrifice. The wires come off of Colin and go on to Trevor, and he gets good and cinched and flayed, and he's toast. Basically, this is it. By this point, Roland is nowhere to be seen. Riley makes it back. Right. So Riley and Colin drive away in her car. Basically, he says, "Oh, it's over. Do you think you made the right choice?" It's like, "Well, obviously, yes. We're both okay." Voight, you mean? Yeah, so Riley doesn't say anything, and then it cuts to the coda, which, as you alluded to, is Voight up in Cenobite space, which is remarkably almost serene. I mean, it's just a bunch of like shifting, swirling, white, smoky looking shit. and he's on some kind of altar or other, sort of in crucifixion position, and he's all hairless and half Cenobite-y looking, and then he gets the full Cenobite treatment. His eyes discolor, and that's why we think, okay, well, if there's another one of these coming down the pipe, he is king shit Cenobite in Hellraiser 2. And yeah, roll credits. More after the break.
Beautiful, isn't it?
It's really nice.
You can hold it.
What is it?
It's a puzzle.
And it's almost finished.
Keep going.
So if I solve it, do I get a prize?
I do.
Hello, listeners. It's Jim, here as always during the break to tell you some stuff you probably already know. Please follow us on Twitter at Shock Doctors Pod, on Facebook at facebook.com/shockdoctorspod, or check us out on Apple Podcasts. The podcast is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you've got an idea for a movie you'd like us to check out, feel free to send us a DM on social media or email us at shockdoctorspod@gmail.com. And now, back to the show.
It's time. Greater delights await. We wish to see you proceed. Feed it. Their blood. Their pain. All for us. What is it you pray for?
And we're back. So, Matt, how about you go ahead? Okay, let's you've tried Lara and you've tried Laura, and her name is Nora. Yeah. That moment that moment would have hit better for me if I had heard her clearly the first time. I didn't. And I remember this very distinctly because this is the only time I did this. I like, okay, wait, what the fuck did she say? Just something ominous, I'm sure. And then I went back and turned on the Hulu subtitles temporarily and played it again. And it's like, oh, I hear bells. I'm like, okay, yeah, that's kind of cool. It probably would have been cooler if I had heard it the first time. So hopefully those of you listening who end up watching this will get to experience it as Matt did and not as I did. I guess we'll find out. Well, yeah, it's not even that she needs to be John Gielgud or anything. It just needed to be louder, and maybe there should have been just a shot of her face while she was saying it. But it's just kind of like, I don't think the camera's pointed right at her, and it's too low on the track volume-wise. It wasn't clear. Like, you can have a character who's kind of mumbly, but you can still figure out what they're saying if it's shot and mixed more appropriately. Well, I'm gonna tell you what it reminded me of, and this is very much not a compliment, and I was waiting for the entire synopsis to put this out there, so here it comes. Everything in the house reminded me way too much of 13 Ghosts, the remake. Yeah, because that centers around a giant... Right, it's got Matthew Lillard in it, so bingo. It's... 90% of the movie takes place in this giant puzzle box house that is designed to trap each one of the aforementioned titular 13 ghosts. And it's one of the worst movies I've ever seen. It's just dreadful. It's kind of fun bad, but not nearly as fun as I would want it to be for how bad it is. And yeah, Roland's mansion in this movie reminded me way too much of a diet version of the house from 13 Ghosts, where, as I said, the entire house is like a puzzle box in a way that Roland's mansion just has some gates and the big cage around it. Yeah. Yeah, I was also... Yeah. And not that I want to compliment 13 Ghosts at all, but the one thing that kind of sort of has going for it in just a guilty pleasure kind of way is that the structure of the house, it's just the way the whole movie's put together. It's got that kind of late 90s, early 2000s, butt-rocky, goofy pulpiness to it in a way that this does not. It's yours was another very apt comparison. It's got way too much escape room DNA in that, in the structure. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that would have went something else. Or addiction, you know. Voight. Right. Oh, that's pretty savage, but not wrong. Well, yeah, it's not anything to do with the performance. I think the problem is we're meant to understand him as this huge, like you say, libertine and debauched Caligula type figure. But the only thing we've seen him do is make this rent boy deploy the Leviathan configuration and summon the Cenobites and then suffer through his nerves being pulled through a spool forever. We see a little bit of it in the Googling, which is basically nothing. We don't get the sense of like, okay, so he threw an Eyes Wide Shut party. I mean, what exactly is so debauched about this guy? What was he into? He went for how he ended up with this rig. He says, I went for liminal, which he took to mean the outer limits of pleasure. And from the Cenobites' perspective, that's what they gave him, pleasure from pain, etc. But that's not what he bargained for. And on that basis, you get the sense, like, was he even into sadomasochism at all? What exactly was the flavor of his debauchery? And shit, yeah, he is. You don't want no part of this shit, do we? I also don't, and we bitched a little bit about this during the synopsis, but I really don't like how the mechanics of the box are deployed. No! I mean, you already said what it's like. It's like biting Dracula in the neck. I think that's perfectly apt. It doesn't make sense. And it's bad enough that they make the process so formulaic. They turn it into a little bit too much of, what was the term we used for a movie like Wish Upon? the cursed object movie. It's just a little bit too much of that. And obviously, intrinsically, the puzzle box is central to Hellraiser. And so to a certain extent, it's always going to be a little bit of a cursed object movie. But it's just got a little too much of that sort of wish upon energy where there are this textbook list of rules. Anyway, that in and of itself is bad enough. But then the fact that the rules are deployed in this sort of brain dead, it was unnecessary. Ultimately, Nora's been taken. You only need two more. Just have the heel turn and you give it to Trevor and you give it to Roland and that's six. And that's, you got your six. You didn't need to do this bullshit with the Cenobites. Just mechanically, it was unnecessary. Yeah. Right. The other mechanical wrinkle, and if it wasn't for the fact that the movie seems to establish these rules so rigidly, I wouldn't even necessarily take issue with this, because ultimately the Cenobites can do whatever the fuck they want. They don't have to follow any set rules, except when the movie makes it seem like they do. So this is why I have this beef. Well, right. I don't understand how, with six sacrifices, there are two wishes on offer. Roland gets to wish for power, and Riley at least gets the opportunity to wish for something and declines it. But theoretically, she could have also chosen power or gone with Lazarus and gotten her monkey's paw resurrected brother back, but she didn't. Whatever. The point is, she could have, and that shouldn't be how that works. It shouldn't be both. And like I said, if they hadn't spent the entire movie making all these rules seem so rigid, it could have just been, well, you know, what happened to Roland is what the Cenobites wanted to have happen anyway, so maybe they just kind of led him to believe he was wishing for something, and they just gave him what they wanted to give him as an additional part of his torture. Whatever, that's fine. And then the actual wish was offered to Riley. But no, this movie's too rigid for that, except in that facet, and that's dumb. It's all or nothing, should be. Yeah, it probably should have been about 20 minutes shorter, and there was plenty of room for it. There's not as much BS thread pulling as there is in Smile, so that wouldn't have been as much of the potential cut time as it would have been in, say, Smile. But again, there was fat there. There was probably about 15 to 20 minutes of fat that could have been cut. No, God forbid. God forbid. Yeah. To do something that I think has fallen by the wayside a little bit in our recent eviscerations of movies we didn't particularly like, just to wrap up with something a little bit more positive. The performances are generally pretty good. Riley's performance is good. Jamie Clayton is a good pinhead. The gender swap thing didn't even register as an issue, which is not surprising because, you know, we're not dickheads, but just confirming that that's not a problem. Right. And while I didn't particularly like the production design of the Spencer Mansion, for lack of a better word, for all the reasons we've already talked about, how it takes the worst elements of 13 Ghosts and the escape room movies and kind of jumbles them up together, I do like how the first about 50% of this movie looks. Just visually, the stuff in the playground looks pretty cool in particular. And yeah, I mean, again, David Bruckner, for the most part, knows what he's doing. He doesn't make really ugly movies in a way that, for whatever reason, it seems like David Gordon Green is perfectly capable and willing to do based on the subject of last episode. But yeah, ultimately, Hellraiser is not great. I sense I disliked it somewhat less than Matt, but neither of us really liked it, so. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, sure. You're goddamn right it does. Sure. So for my recommendations, I'll go ahead and recommend The Ritual, which we've already touched on. I would tend to agree with Matt. Probably, for my money, the best film David Bruckner has done so far. The Nighthouse was also pretty good, but we did a whole episode on that. Don't really need to talk about that. If you want a dumb puzzle box house movie that's really, 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 really dumb, check out 13 Ghosts. What the fuck? I think that's a good term for it. Yeah, that and Ghost Ship. Sure. Yeah. But the movie I'm going to do a little bit more of a full recommendation on, and we may have recommended this already, but if we did, it was long enough ago that I feel okay about doing it again. It's Resolution. It's the first Benson and Moorhead feature, and it's about a pair of friends, one of whom is an alcoholic, and the other friend has brought him out to this cabin, ostensibly just for them to hang out and catch up and so forth. But his plan is to get his friend to dry out. And in the course of that, reality just kind of unspools, which is really sort of Benson and Moorhead's joint specialty at this point. I mean, they did that one movie, Spring, which is more of a romantic monster movie. But pretty much every other movie they've done, at least every other feature they've done, has kind of involved warped reality in some way. And indeed, several of those movies are linked together in the same Benson and Moorhead cinematic universe, for lack of a better term. Yeah. But anyway, so just like this movie, at least, is about, to a certain extent, addiction, particularly at the outset, sort of establishing Riley's character. Resolution is also about addiction and attempted recovery, and I think it's a better movie than Hellraiser, this one. And also, for my money, the old one, because I don't like it, but I'm alone on this podcast in that, so I won't belabor that point. So yeah, check out Resolution from, I believe, 2012. Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead. But now that we've returned the puzzle box to the lament configuration, we can put it back in its wooden crate for having watched Hellraiser 2022. I don't think so. I don't think it was quite so bad, but yes. Used to be called The Devil's Light, which, while kind of nonsensical, was at least a more interesting sounding title. But I bitched about this before. Until next time, I'm Jim Smith. And we are the Shock Doctors. We'll see you later.
As always, we have some acknowledgments. Our music was composed by Will Connor. Audio for the bumpers was taken from Hellraiser official trailer Hulu, uploaded by 20th Century Studios. All rights reserved. Our next episode will be up on Sunday, November 13th, and we will be discussing the long-delayed exorcism film, Pray for the Devil. See you then.